Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is the Tech Guy Podcast. This show originally aired on St. Patrick's Day, Saturday, March 17th, 2007, on the premier radio networks, including XM Channel 152, and of course, local talk stations all over the country. Check thetechguylabs.com or your local station for a schedule of and a list of stations. This is episode number 335. Good day, everyone. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. That means we're about to talk high tech. And this is kind of the toy store. That's how I think of it. The fun stuff. Not just computers and the internet, of course. Cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players. Anything with a chip in it. 88-88. Ask Leo is the phone number. 88-88. Ask Leo. I'd love to hear from you if there's a topic on your mind, something you'd like to talk about. Could be 8888. Yell at Leo, 8888. I mean, that won't work, but I mean, that's the idea. Query Leo, complain to Leo, any of that stuff. 8888, ask Leo. Interesting story. Brian Livingston published this in his Windows Secret newsletter. It's windowssecrets.com, and frankly, it's kind of a shocker. After all that Microsoft's done and said about security and about anti-piracy, it's really not a security issue. It is for Microsoft, but not for the rest of us. It's more about protecting themselves from getting Vista stolen. And they've got, boy, they have, you know, padlock, chain, bolt, deadbolt. They've got every possible lock on this thing to keep you from stealing Vista. Because, you know, we're all a bunch of thieves. And then it turns out there's a there's a very simple documented hack that turns it off. Brian Livingston did a little conference call this week in which he demonstrated it. It's apparently hack's not really the right word. A backdoor. It's a registry change. Now Microsoft calls it a hack. Because they want you to think it's illegal, but it's frankly documented. Livingston says it's not a hack; it's a documented feature of the operating system. In fact, you can go online and read where Microsoft says how to do it, and it works. So, if you go to windowssecrets.com, you can read the whole thing. What it does is it turns off. You know, what happens with Vista is you're allowed to use it without activating it for 30 days. So that means you can even download a disk from Microsoft, download the install from Microsoft, or you borrow a friend's disk or whatever. You don't enter a serial number. You just install it, and it'll run like that for 30 days. The idea is you can test it out, right? Well, Microsoft has, and then after 30 days, Vista will say, hey, dude, You gotta give me a serial number and you gotta activate it. And if you purchased it, you'll have a serial number. You enter that serial number, and you could do it when you install it. You could do all this right up front, but you don't have to for 30 days. And then you press the activate button, and it goes online and it registers that serial number to your machine to keep you from using it on other machines. If you don't do that after 30 days, Windows Vista gets really dumb. I mean, it basically stops working well. I think everything pretty much but the browser stops working. You can't use it. Well, turns out after that 30-day timer can be reset. You go into the registry editor and you modify a key called skip rearm. And this is all documented very thoroughly. Not only does Brian Livingston document it at windowssecrets.com, but Microsoft documents it. Skip rearm, and you change that value to a 1, which basically says skip rearm. I guess rearm is Microsoft's way of saying check to see if this is legit. And then you have to enter a command into the command prompt. And that pushes the activation deadline out to at least a year. You can do it indefinitely as many times as you want. So in effect, you could just basically say, don't ever ask me, and run fully as if you're real. Livingston said, I asked Microsoft why this is in Vista. If it can create machines that appear not to need activation for long periods, a Microsoft spokeswoman said, I connected with my colleagues and learned, unfortunately, we do not have information to share at this time. They don't want to admit it. Here's the reason Brian says this is put into Vista is for corporate IT administrators. It's just too much of a pain for them in a big installation. You might have 10, 20, 30,000 copies of Vista. It's just too difficult for them to go around. So Microsoft basically put this in and documented it for business so that they didn't have to bother activating it, because they buy one copy of Windows. They buy many seats, but they only have one disk. So it makes it very simple. Now, Brian says, and I agree with him, look, we're not trying to give you a way to get around paying for Vista. In fact, if you did this as a company, you could get in real trouble if the Business Software Alliance came in for an audit. But it does mean that Microsoft's kind of in trouble, frankly, because this is widely publicized. Everybody knows about it. And it works. And so there's no reason why, this really underscores the issue with piracy protection technologies. They never really work, frankly. And people who are sophisticated enough or motivated enough to figure out how to get around them always will find out ways around them. As in this case. Well, this is a little bit, this is actually Microsoft's own fault. Usually they have to find a hack. This is like Microsoft just gave away the store on this one. Now, by the way, if you've already activated on a different machine, this isn't going to work. So I take that back. No, he's talking about real activation here. He points out activation doesn't stop software piracy anyway. There are lots of ways around this activation scheme. But now there's an official method. Microsoft says that's a hack, that's piracy. Anybody who does that is a pirate. But they document it, they put it in their system, and it's there. And after all the efforts with Windows Genuine Advantage, and they've really annoyed so many people who have legitimate copies of Windows with this Windows Genuine Advantage, at least, Microsoft's own estimate, something like 1% of all systems incorrectly say they're pirated, even if they're not. So that means hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who are told you have a pirated copy of Windows, even when you don't. So this thing, this system that they put in, not only penalizes honest paying users, but is trivial to break for non-paying users. Now, I guess Microsoft could patch this, but the key, it's simple enough for people who want to continue to use it, just to avoid that particular patch. It's kind of a black eye for Microsoft, and a black eye in general for these kinds of technologies, these anti-piracy technologies. How many times have we heard this story that they just don't work? 8888, Ask Leo's the number if you want to talk about that. I'm going to talk tomorrow, I think, about the big lawsuit, the $1 billion lawsuit Viacom's going after YouTube. We'll save that conversation for tomorrow, because there's a lot to talk about there. One other quick story. If you were worried about your MacBook being hijacked by a flaw in the wireless, the guy who put the hack together and demonstrated it at Black Hat last fall has admitted, it's really not a hack against Apple or a MacBook, because we had to install a third-party card in there, which nobody would do because they come with the cards built in, the Wi-Fi cards built in. So something you should know if you're a Mac user and you were worried about getting hacked on your Wi-Fi, that hack turns out, they didn't fake it, but they did something that no Mac user would ever do. Don't feel like if you're a Mac user, you're absolutely immune. You're not. There are flaws. Apple just pushed out a update to its operating system. You should download 10.4.9 if you're using OS 10 Tiger. 10.4, you should get that. Should always run a software update on Windows and Mac all the time. Microsoft decided not to push out any updates at all on Patch Tuesday. Not that there weren't any flaws. There are still some exploits out there. There's a zero-day flaw in Microsoft Office and so forth, but they decided not to. There wasn't anything critical enough for them to push it out. So far, Vista looks pretty good. So far, it looks pretty safe. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about security with Steve Gibson later on in the show. My gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo, the GizWiz, will join us. Paul Thurrott, our Windows Vista expert, with another Vista tip. We've got some great stuff coming up for you. But really, this show is all about your calls. That's what we do here. It's answer your questions, talk about it. If you've been to a store and you wonder what some term means that you've seen in the store, if you'd like more clarification on that, maybe some buying advice. If you want to complain about something you bought recently, say, this is no good, I don't want it. Whose idea was this? We can talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. I was up in Vancouver last week getting ready for the new TV show. We're shooting it in high def. I have to say, boy, high def, it's amazing. You know, I've worked at TV now for 15 years, something like that. And this is the first show I've done in high def. And there actually was there's a lot of fear among people who work in television about high def. But it looks fine. You look real. You look like you look. Maybe that's why some people are afraid. I've given up. I gave up long ago. That'll be airing in Canada and Australia. We hope to find a U.S. network too, probably next month or the month after. It's called The Lab with Leo Laporte. But we had a lot of fun doing it. All right, your call's coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. I'd love to talk to you. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Justin. Thank you. Thank you so much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I never understood the appeal of that song. I take an exercise class where there's a very elaborate thing we do to that. And I have bad associations with Justin Timberlake now as a result. It's all my fault. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 8888. I don't have it in front of me, but Ask Leo. That's all you need. Let's go to line 3, Serena in San Diego. Hello, Serena. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I am with Sprint, and I just got an offer to upgrade my cell phone.
You must have been a member for a couple of years now.
Yeah, I've been a member with Sprint for several years, unfortunately.
That's what they do. When your contract is about to run out, they go, hey, maybe you'd like a new cell phone, and then they say very quietly, which would extend your contract for another 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Incidentally.
Which is fine, because my husband's with Sprint, so we get
Sprint's fine. Yeah, you get the in-network calling is free, and that's great.
Yes. So my question is, I'm not sure, I'm kind of indecisive, as many people are, about what cell phone to get, because the three that I'm contemplating is the Sanyo Katana, the Motorola Razr, and the Samsung A900M.
Yeah, so you're looking for sleek and sexy.
Yes.
You want sleek, sexy phones. None of these big, fat smartphones for you, no sir.
Yes.
They're all good phones. I'll tell you, the rap on the Razr, although I think it's gotten much, much better, was the sound quality, and that was really bad in the first few editions, but now by the time they're up to V3, it's much, much better.
Yeah, it's a V3M.
And they're a little fragile, but I think they're not as fragile as they used to be. So I think that a lot of the negatives about the Razr have gotten better. And it's a nice looking phone. I mean, it, you know, you can't beat it. It doesn't, you know, it's a very simple phone. And you were talking about which Samsung were you talking about?
It's Samsung A900M. It looks almost identical to the Razr.
Yeah, I like the A900s. That has a good camera in it.
Okay.
Do you use the camera?
I don't have a camera phone now, but I have two little ones, so the camera
phone
would be
it.
Great.
Yeah, and that's got a good camera. And the Katana, of course, is pink, so you can't
beat
that.
That's the only reason why I was considering the Katana.
Actually, Sanyo makes pretty good phones. I'll be honest with you, between the three of them, there isn't a lot to choose from. They're all kind of slim clamshell designs. They're all good looking. I happen to like the A9000? A900, I mean,
yeah.
I should say. I happen to like that one quite a bit. I don't think there's that much difference, frankly, between them.
Okay. Because I know they all have Bluetooth, which is something that I really like.
You got to have Bluetooth.
And then, obviously, the aesthetics. My question, too, was, like, they all seem to offer, like, the voice-activated dialing that's already built into the phone.
That's very handy, frankly.
Now, is that's custom, or is that, like, you have to pay for the service? Because I know with Sprint, with my cell phone now, like, if I do the voice-activated dialing, they charge, like, $5 a month. But
there's two different ways to do it. There's a way to do it in the phone, where the phone knows what you've got, and that's what those three offer. And then you can also do it through Sprint, where Sprint has your phone book and knows what you've got.
Okay.
And so, yeah, you pay extra for that. But I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, folks, if you're a Sprint customer, but I'm pretty sure that the in-phone version of that doesn't cost additionally. It's just the phone doing it. Now Sprint can turn that off.
Okay.
That's why you have to, you know, and that's why I'm not sure what Sprint, often these companies will do this. Sprint's pretty good about it. So sometimes companies will disable capabilities because they want you to buy something.
Yeah, I heard that Verizon's doing that with, like, the Razr.
Right, and a lot of them do it with ringtones. So you can, even though the phone can probably understand an MP3, they won't let you put an MP3 on the phone because they want you to pay $1.90 for the 99 for their ringtones.
Gotcha.
Now, I don't know if Sprint does that or not. Verizon's notorious for that. Sprint's pretty good about that, I think. And they have great data plans. That's one of the reasons. They're a good company for smartphones, but you don't want that. You want slim. You want sexy.
I just want
pink.
Sexy, crazy, sexy, cool phone.
You're not alone. I'll be honest with you. I think both the Sanyo and the Samsung are superior to the Razr.
Okay.
And they're all Razr-like now.
Yes, they are.
They're thin. You know, they learn from the Razr. They all, I would say, if you're interested in getting the camera, then go with the Samsung. The A900 has the best camera in the bunch.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for the call. It is hard to decide. You've narrowed it down so much that really there's not much difference, frankly, between the three. Let's go to line five, because this call's from Croatia. Chris on the line via Skype, I take it. Hi, Chris.
Actually, I'm using the callback service, Leo.
That's excellent. Sounds great.
But I've got a simple question for you, I think, but I couldn't find the answer on the internet.
Okay.
I've got a Linksys router
that
I purchased in the States, and I was running it on a power adapter that was a step-down power adapter.
Yep.
1,000 milliamps.
Okay.
And it burned up somehow. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, because it's doing a lot of work, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So in Croatia, it's 220?
Right, exactly.
And you need to step it down to 110, the voltage.
Exactly.
Now, I'm surprised that the Linksys adapter didn't handle 220. Sometimes a lot of these do.
Hey, I don't know about adapters. Most everything else that I've seen does. But,
computer gear, they make it 110, 220. I'm surprised the Linksys didn't. So you're looking for a new step-down transformer, I guess, yeah?
Well, I've got another step-down transformer, but it's only 500 mega amps, and I don't know what the amps has effect on.
Well, it's the amount of current that's coming through, and does the Linksys power adapter say anything about? It just says how many volts it needs, probably.
No, it says 1,000 milliamps.
1,000 milliamps, and yours is 500 milliamps? Yeah, I think you better get 1,000. Even if it works, you'll burn it out faster. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Coming up, security man Steve Gibson.
you're up.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy from the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, where it is spring with a vengeance. The sun is shining and the trees are blossoming. You know, with all this sunshine, there's always a dark side. The dark side to every silver cloud. And that is when we talk about security. And a man who lives in the dark side is with us, Steve Gibson of GRC.com and the Security Now podcast. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Great to be back with you.
I've known about you for a long time, of course, for Spin Right. And even before that, you did a light pen interface for the Apple. And I read your column at InfoWorld. But I think you became well known to the security community through your efforts at GRC.com on Shields Up, which
yep,
is...
That was the big breakthrough for us, essentially. I got interested in the internet, and I realized when I was hooking our corporation, when I was hooking Gibson Research up onto the net, that IP addresses around ours had exposed open ports that allowed anyone to access people's hard disk drives.
So you were setting up your corporate network, and you were on a cable modem? Must have been on a cable modem, yeah?
Actually, this was sort of before that. We were on ADSL.
Oh, interesting. But you were able to see inadvertently shared hard drives by people all over the neighborhood.
Yes, exactly. I was just sort of curious, and so I looked around at other IP addresses and realized, my goodness, I mean, here was like people's exposed C drives just wide open to the net.
Wow.
Well, anyway, so what I did was I created Shields Up as an educational site and a free testing service that would allow anybody to check to see whether they had any well-known common ports open. The vulnerability is known as an open port.
And now almost 50 million computers tests later, it's still probably the best known security test on anywhere on the net. I have to say, though, you hit the nail on the head when you started talking about ports, because it's not a common word, and I think it often confuses people. In fact, it's probably a pretty bad choice, since computers have had ports long before the internet, those serial ports and the printer ports on the back of your computer. You're not talking about those.
No, exactly. And you're right. That is often a source of confusion. No, this notion of a internet port is a sort of an abstraction that was created by the internet designers. The idea was that not only could a machine have a uniquely identifiable IP address, which locates it anywhere literally in the world.
And every machine, every computer on the network, on the internet, has a unique, that's that 192.168.1.whatever, or actually that's an internal address, but that's the idea. Each one has a unique one.
Exactly. And in fact, if people have been on the net for a while, they may have encountered these numbers. They're typically four numbers ranging from 0 to 255 separated by a period. So it'll be, 127.192.47.13 or something. And
that's
usually
from your internet service provider, right? That's who gives that to you.
Exactly. And, when we put in www.amazon.com or twit.tv or any of those easy to sort of remember addresses, what actually happens is those are translated into these dotted decimal IP addresses, which are what the actual traffic uses to route itself around the net. So the designers of this system realized that, well, they wanted more granularity, more points of access for systems on the internet than just the one IP address. So they created not only an IP address concept, but this notion of a port, which numbers from 1 to 65535, that is 64K, 65,000 ports. And so when traffic comes to a computer, it comes there first by its IP address to get to the specific machine by that IP address. And then the port sort of decides where in that machine the traffic should go. And that's been a problem historically for people, is machines that inadvertently had open ports, like those that I discovered early on the internet, would allow essentially, because the port is open, as is the term, essentially that port is listening for any traffic coming into people's computers, which created vulnerabilities because very clever hackers would figure out ways of essentially injecting their unsolicited data into someone's machine, which could actually be used to take it over remotely.
So knowing that, well, first of all, everybody's got them. You have to have ports. I think sometimes I use the word channels because it's kind of like that. It's different channels that you can tune into. But if you are on the internet, you shouldn't, your ports shouldn't be open.
That is absolutely true today.
You have to have some ports open, right? Or you wouldn't be able to be on the internet at all.
Well, the technology has evolved a lot since those days. Many people are behind what's called a NAT router. It's one of those little, you know, residential routers, which allows you to basically share one IP address on the public internet among multiple computers in your home. Many people use those to create wireless access, and we'll be talking about these sorts of things in weeks to come. But the other thing is that personal firewalls are now very common, and in fact, XP and Vista both have them built in. All of these technologies, personal firewalls or one of these little residential routers, all of those close the ports from the outside to prevent unsolicited traffic from getting into your computer.
So that's why people go to Shields Up. They've just installed a new broadband router. They're sharing their internet. They want to see if they're secure. Maybe they're running a software firewall. They want to see if they're secure. They surf to grc.com and they run Shields Up, and you tell them if you can see them.
Exactly. And in fact, that's the system that I created about 7 or 8 years ago. Was you just go to grc.com on our homepage. If you scroll down about 3/4 of the way down, you'll find a link to Shields Up. That, of course, and you'll also find links to our podcast and the other things you and I do together, Leo. But if they click on that link to Shields Up, we'll take them through a very simple page, just making sure that they want to have us check their computer. When they give me permission, just by clicking a button, and this is all free, my system sends probe packets, so-called packets of data, aimed at all of their various possible open ports, looking to see if I get any response back from their system. And then I show them on a web page that is designed custom just for them whether anything came back.
And you don't, the answer that you are looking for is nothing, right? I don't see
right.
you.
And that is almost certainly what people are going to get today if they're behind a router and if they've got firewalls running. But Shields Up is a very simple and quick way just to make sure your shields are up.
Excellent. So keep your ports. Actually, you have three states. You talk about open, which obviously is open for business. Come on in, buddies. Close, which means we're here, but we've closed the door. And you talk about stealth, which is it's actually closed, but doesn't respond at all. It's just like as if nothing was on that port.
Exactly. And in fact, it's very cool. You would rather just not have any presence at all on the internet.
Because any response to a hacker at all is a dangerous thing. I mean, if you're saying, no, I'm closed, they at least know you're there.
Exactly. It's sort of like you could imagine like having a lot where your house is appear empty because your house has been stealthed.
Ooh, I like that.
You would rather have someone walk by and not know there's even a house there than have them, you know, go up and try your doorknobs and see, okay, well, they're locked, but there's at least something here.
Yeah.
And so stealthing your ports, which is what the routers do today and personal firewalls do, just keeps you completely, it's like that IP address where your computer actually is vacant. There's nobody there. Hackers just move on by.
Try it out for yourself, grc.com. Click the link to get to Shields Up. That's Steve's absolutely free security testing system. You do a great job on that site of explaining what it all means. So if you want to know more, that's a good place to go to learn about ports in greater detail. Of course, if you're interested in security, Steve and I do a weekly podcast. That's an internet audio show that you can listen to, download for free at twit.tv. Steve is also the author of Shields Up, besides Shields Up, SpinRite, S-P-I-N-R-I-T-E, which is a great disk recovery and maintenance utility. I like to give him a plug for that because It saved my bacon more than once, that's for sure. Steve, great to talk to you, and we'll talk again next week.
Perfect. Thanks, Leo.
Let's go on with more calls. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and Mike is on the line from El Segundo. Hello, Mike. Line two. Oh, is he gone?
I would like to ask you a question about what's the best way to make a high-quality voice recording that would be suitable for sending as a demo recording out to maybe radio or TV stations. And I know the microphone quality is a very important part of that. But I was wondering, is a desktop or laptop computer considered suitable for that purpose?
Yeah, it is. Although, in general, you don't want to use the analog input, in my opinion. And I've had arguments with people about this. But I don't think you want to use the analog input ports of either a desktop or a laptop. What you really want to do is have, if you're going to use a good microphone, you're going to need an interface anyway, because they don't have any way to connect to the computer. So you'll need, let's say you get a good microphone, and then you connect it to the computer using a digital to analog converter. M-Audio makes one called the Fast Track that takes a regular mic input and turns it into USB. And that's better, because it'll do a better job than the sound card in your computer will. And at that point, you're recording perfectly. You have a great recording quality.
What if you have a higher-end sound card, one of the like Creative Labs higher-end sound cards? Would that be suitable?
Yeah, it works, but how are you? But now you've got to get a microphone that goes into it. And most microphones...
They have the analog input jack. You said avoid the analog jack, though. Is that right?
Yeah, but most microphones have mic-level output. I'll tell you, you're not going to get good results. I mean, nobody I know who's doing audio recording is going to take a professional microphone, put it on a mini jack, and plug it into the mic level input of a sound card. Do you have a good mic?
No, I would need to buy one. Do you have recommendations?
Yeah, the best way to go, then, let's make it simple, is get the Rode, R-O-D-E mic. It's got a USB interface. You just plug into the USB. You'll get great quality. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy at 8888. Ask Leo. Let's talk about tech. A computer is a really good recording device. I mean, makes perfect digital recordings. It's all about the inputs. And people do yell at me. They say, well, you have a good sound card, you got an analog input port, it should be fine. My experience, though, first of all, those mini jacks and the cables that go into them, I guess if you got really good cables and you're really careful, maybe you'd get a clean connection, but it's a really good way for interference, radio frequency interference specifically, which is floating all around all the time to get into the computer. The best way to record into a computer, in my opinion, is to use a device that does the conversion from analog, and that's what a microphone gives you, is analog input, from analog into the digital, the bits and bytes that the computer wants, outside the computer, away from the computer, where it's quieter. And that's what a microphone like this Rode, R-O-D-E, I think it's RodePodcaster.com, is designed for podcasters. It's not the world's greatest mic, but it's like $150, so the price is right. And it has a USB interface on the mic. The mic has circuitry inside it that converts the analog sound, the electrical signals that the mic generates, into bits and bytes that the computer wants. And it does it in the mic, it does it externally. And it gives, I think, very good quality. And then, of course, once it's in the computer, you can record it with free programs like Audacity. That's an open source program for Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's absolutely free. Or, any number of programs. And you'll have a perfect quality recording. It's really what happens before it turns into bits that's the issue. The quality of the mic, the quality of the interface, how much interference gets in, the quality of the cabling, while it's analog. Once it's digital, none of that matters. It's bits. They either make it or they don't. Another good company, Samson, S-A-M-S-O-N. They're a little bit less expensive. Samsung, I think it's Samsun, S-A-M-S-O-N. I think it's C-O-U-1, something like that. It's a USB mic. I was introduced to that by Roger McGuinn, formerly of the Byrds, who uses it to record his albums onto his computer. So I think that's pretty high recommendation. That's I think, $80 and $90. It's not an expensive mic. I think the Rode's a little higher quality. And then if you want to use, you know, a good mic, a Neumann or a Heil PR40, which is what I use for voice, or a Electro Voice RE27, one of the standard voice mics, you'll need a device that has a microphone connection, an XLR connection, and turns it into USB. And the M-Audio Fast Track at about $150 is fairly affordable, does a good job. That's used by a lot of people. Let's go to line four. Jim, Newport Beach. Hi, I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Jim.
I enjoy your podcast about 8 or 10 hours a week.
And wow.
I decided to invest the day to solve a really irritating old issue.
All right.
Talking to you in person.
Good. What can we do for you?
I have a XPS computer, Dell computer, with the Audigy sound cards, yep. And I actually had two different sound cards. My problem is ground hum. I have a big Yamaha tuner and receiver. I have a 7.1 stereo sound system set up. I get great CD music. I get great DVD reproduction and so on. But when I plug it into the sound card in the computer, I get a terrible ground hum.
Just exactly what I was talking about. It's an unbalanced input. It's not a grounded input. So that often happens. And that's why often I prefer to see the conversion to digital outside the computer, and then the computer's just getting bits over USB. So those Audigy cards are fine cards. It's not that. It's just that they're not grounded, and you get a lot of noise in there. So yeah, that's coming from your amp? Your connection is from the amp to the sound card, or how? What are you connecting to the sound card?
Yes, the sound card has one of the plugs.
Yeah, it's a mini jack
into the.
And you're using the line in or the mic in? Because I think there's both, right?
I have a line in.
So it's line out to line at line in.
Auxiliary in an auxiliary port, yeah. And well, I bought the 3-to-2 converters. I've tried moving plugs around and extension cords and
shielded cables, all of that stuff.
I have about 30, plugs around the house in the room, and
I can't
seem to get rid of it.
Yeah, I would suggest getting there are a number of companies that make these, USB audio connector. So it has a USB plug on one side that goes into your computer, and then it has, a little lump in the middle, which is the circuitry that converts the A to D converter, and then it has an analog jack into it. And there are a number of companies that make these, and there are better quality than worse. I mean, for $30 you can get the Griffin iMic, but I think there's better stuff out there, including the M-Audio stuff. I use one. Let me think if I can remember the name. See, I tend to try to use professional gear because I do so much broadcasting with my stuff. But Behringer makes a USB interface. It's like $29. There are a lot of companies that do this. And what'll happen is you're just getting it away from the computer. But then, because also you can move it around, you can get it away from the other stuff, too, and you can just try different places. Better cabling, the cable that goes from your amp to the device or to the computer, make sure those are shielded, high quality. But it's not grounded, so it's not unusual for you to see hum get in there. It's just like plugging an electric guitar into a computer. You'll see a lot of that, too. So I would say it's the same advice I gave the last guy, really, which is convert the audio outside the computer, which at least eliminates one source of noise. Plus those little mini jack plugs and the cables you tend to use with those, they're not great. So you'll be better. Take Behringer makes one, and Behringer's not the greatest quality in the world, but they're good. You can spend a lot more if you want something like the Fast Track that I mentioned from M-Audio. M-Audio makes good pro quality stuff. Griffin makes one called the iMic. Same idea. All of these are all the same. They're essentially external sound cards, and they work pretty well. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. The show notes are online, by the way, at techguylabs.com. We've got Shuby taking notes. The chat room's there, too, irc.dslextreme.com. And I've got lots more of your calls coming up. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Are you in the mood? I'm in the mood. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the toll-free number. I love hearing. We're here from all over the world. That's just amazing. Thanks to the internet. I'll tell you, it's just remarkable. And, of course, to all the great stations that carry this show. We thank them all. Including the mothership, KFI. This portion of my show brought to you by my good friends at DSL Extreme, my internet service provider. 8, call them right now. Get your high-speed internet at a great price. 866, the number 2, GetNet. 866-2, GETNET, or visit them online at dslextreme.com. dslextreme.com. They provide our chat room. We thank them for that support. 122 people in there. Our chat moderator's keeping it clean, so it's age appropriate for any age. That's irc.dslextreme.com if you'd like to join them in there. And I, in between, during breaks, I get in there and chat best I can. But we've got a lot of nice users in there. It's really a lot of fun. Also, the show notes online at Tech Guy Labs. There's a thing going on called OpenID. I'm trying to learn more about this. We do a podcast on Sunday nights. We're going to interview one of the OpenID guys on this Sunday to talk about it. It's on our Net at Night podcast. You're hearing a lot about it right now, and it makes a lot of sense. The idea is, well, you know, right now as you go around the net, you have to identify yourself to everybody individually, with passwords. There's some security issues with that. You're typing your password a lot. You got to remember your password. People often choose bad passwords just so they can remember them, their kids' names or birthdays and or a combination thereof. That's very common and frankly doesn't make a good password because it's guessable. So there's a move afoot, and it's not new. It's been going on for a while. In fact, Microsoft tried it with the, you remember, with their single sign-on system and the passport system. They still use it, but not a lot of systems use it. I guess nobody trusted Microsoft. I don't know. For some reason, it just didn't catch on. But there's a move afoot to create a decentralized kind of digital identity. It doesn't belong to any one site. You create it on an OpenID site, and there are a lot of them. I use one called ClaimID at ClaimID.com. But there are a lot of different companies that do this. And once you create this identity, the hope is you'll be able to authenticate it, and then it'll follow you around on the internet. It'll protect you, and it'll make it easier to log on to sites. Once the site says, yeah, we're going to support OpenID, you'll have one password. You'll go through your OpenID provider. It'll be strong authentication, so it's very secure. But it's easier for you because you only have to remember one password. You think this is a good idea? I mean, it doesn't seem to work to have 100 different passwords. I mean, every site you go to, you've got to create a new logon for. OpenID seems like a good solution. Hasn't yet been widely adopted, and that's kind of one of the limitations of it. OpenID.net if you want to read more about it. And then, as I said, there are a lot of OpenID providers. I'm using ClaimID. If you go to ClaimID.com, for instance, /Leo, that's my ClaimID name. That'll show you. ClaimID provides a number of services. There's an OpenID service, but it also provides the chance to claim websites or claim stuff so that you know what's you and what's not. And nowadays, I tell you, a lot of people with phony MySpace pages, it's easy to create a phony page that can be very embarrassing when you're looking for work or you just have a date. So the idea of ClaimID is to say, hey, I stake my claim to these pages. These are mine. Others are not. But you can also create an OpenID there. And then I'm also trying a new service, the number 2IDI.com. Similar idea. And although this, it's also an OpenID provider. A lot of times they'll give you OpenID Plus. So ClaimID gives you OpenID Plus a verification of your presence on the net. What sites are yours, what sites aren't. 2IDI, the idea is to eliminate spam by forcing people to send you email through this system. And they authenticate before the email goes through. Now, this isn't probably the way you'd want to go. You'd want to go for your general email. But imagine you're a public figure like me. I get a lot of email. I get, as I mentioned before, a million spams a month, a million a month. And it's been a problem for me. And I've been trying to figure out a way to put out my email address without getting harvested by these spammers. And so this is an interest. 2IDI is an interesting solution. If you go to my website, in fact, I'll put this on the show notes page. I'm now putting up a new contact Leo that actually goes to this 2IDI form. You get an I name. My I name is equals Leo Laporte. And it's a way to authenticate email. It's not exactly like those systems, which I don't like, where you bounce back email until somebody proves they're a real person. I don't like them for several reasons. First of all, most people find that annoying. But also because it's saying to the spammer, anybody who sends you spam, hey, it's me. And if the spammer is falsifying the return addresses they usually do, you're sending junk mail yourself. A lot of it. So there are a number of reasons I don't like these validation services. But this is a little different because in order to send me an email, you actually go to a web-based form. I don't know. I'm just trying it out. I'm looking at all these services. We clearly have an issue with identity on the net and wanting to prove who you are. And also with spam and multiple logins, and there are a number of attempts to solve these. I'd like to hear from you if you've got a way that works for you. 8888 Ask Leo. How do you solve these issues? I have another solution that I've recommended in the past that I use. It's kind of an interesting idea. It's from Zarati Labs. It's called GenPass, or actually now I use Super Gen Pass. If you Google Super, SuperGenPass, the first link that comes up will be labs.zarate.org. And it's Chris Zarate, and what he's written is kind of an interesting solution to this problem. He's written a JavaScript bookmarklet. So you'll go to this site, and you'll generate a bookmarklet, which you then put in your links toolbar, you know, at the top of the page in Firefox or Internet Explorer. And when you get to a site that wants a password, you just click that, and it generates a password based, it's unique for every site because it's based on your universal password. You'll have one universal password, and then he combines it mathematically with something called a hash with the domain you're going to. So if you go to techguylabs.com, I don't ask for a password, let's make Amazon.com, and you're setting up an account at Amazon, when it asks for a password, you press this Super Gen Pass button, it asks for your master password, which doesn't change ever, it's the same all the time, but generates a unique password just for Amazon, only Amazon.com. Nobody else uses that password, and you can't reverse engineer the mastered password from it. It's one way, and so that way, this Super Gen Pass creates a unique password for every page you go to, but you only remember one password. I think this is a good solution. There are some drawbacks. The passwords are tough. They're tough to remember, and it doesn't keep track of them. So as a result, you know, you have to run this script every time you go to this page to remember your password. I guess I could copy and paste and put it somewhere safe. But the idea is really you don't have to save the password. Of course, there's RoboForm, which is another solution. People use the RoboForm. I like RoboForm, RoboForm.com. It's a password generator. It memorizes them. Pretty effective. Absolutely free, although there is a pro version that's a little bit of money, not very expensive. RoboForm. That's for Windows only. There are a lot of different solutions to this. It's a tough one. We've got to find good solutions to this. Somebody has made the equivalent of RoboForm for the Macintosh, And I'm trying to remember the name of it. They just sent me a note. Darn it, I can't remember it. I'll find it for you. That's another way to go. But then that only works if you have it on every computer that you use. There's no one perfect way, is there? How do you handle it? 8888 Ask Leo. I'd love to hear from you. Julie's in Acton, California, line 4. Hello, Julie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'd like to get a recommendation on a laptop computer for my son starting college in the fall.
How exciting. And
yeah.
I think a great time to get a laptop. My first recommendation is make sure he is responsible and has a lock. Because remember when we were in school, 10 speeds were stolen right and left. Now it's laptops.
Okay.
You can get a Kensington lock that will lock it down. So if he goes to the library, here's what happens. You go to the library, he's working along, and he has to go to the bathroom. So he doesn't want to pack up the laptop and carry it with him. He leaves it there. When he gets back, it's gone. These Kensington locks, they go around the table leg. It just makes it a little harder to steal. The next thing to do is find out what they use in that school, Windows or Mac.
Okay.
Often a call to the bursar will, not only will you find out what they prefer, sometimes they don't care, most of the time they don't care, but sometimes they have a preference, but you may also find out that the school, the college bookstore has a deal.
Okay, good.
And you can get a good deal there. I think the thing about a laptop for college is, remember, that this is more than just a laptop, it's his home entertainment system, so make sure you get one with a DVD player, CD burner for backup. You might want to send him with some good speakers. It could be a stereo, too.
Okay. He may be living at home, and so bringing it back and forth as he commutes.
You know, hang on. Let's talk a little bit more about it, because I want to get some more parameters from you about exactly what he's looking for, because it is customized. The general recommendation, of course, is, get a lock, get good speakers, get a DVD player. But he's living at home. He wants a lightweight one. That's a little bit different. Let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about choosing a laptop. There's lots to think about. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Glad you're here today. So, keep her on the line.
Yeah, I got her.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, the tech guy. Not a tech guy. The tech guy from the Tech Guy Labs in Northern California, talking about technology. We're talking with Julie. She's sending her son off to college. That's exciting. Wants to get him a laptop. A perfect idea. You know, laptops are pretty much all the same these days in terms of capabilities. There's not a whole lot of difference. But one thing that they do compromise on, or they do vary on, is size, screen, keyboard, and pointing device. You still there, Julie?
Yes, I'm here.
So has he used a computer for school? In high school, did he use a computer?
Yeah, he's real good on the computer.
Good.
And
so you want to take him along when you buy.
Definitely.
Nothing's more insulting to a geek than to have his mother buy a computer without asking.
Right. We've been talking about it, and I told him I was going to call you.
Oh, that's good. It is a good idea if you've not used a laptop before. It's a very good idea to try the different pointing devices. Most of them now use these trackpads where you run your finger along it. Some people don't like them. The IBM ThinkPads have that little rubber eraser in the keyboard. Some people prefer that. I can't for the life of me use it, but some people like that. And, of course, you can always attach a mouse, but that's something to consider. Keyboard is also important. He's going to be doing a lot of typing. Some people are less comfortable with some keyboards than others. Where the arrow keys are and things like that.
Okay, I was hoping that you could give me a recommendation, like, is it a good time to buy a Vista, or is that the only option?
He's not going to, you're not going to have much choice, to be honest. If you're getting a Windows laptop, you're pretty much going to get Vista.
Okay.
Now, the good news is, if you're getting a new machine, and and it's Vista capable, you're not going to have any hardware issues with it, and unless you're using oddball software, which you won't be, you'd be using Office, you're not going to have any compatibility issues. So I do tell people don't upgrade, don't rush into the upgrade, but if you're buying a new machine, that's fine.
We figured we might as well get one with Vista that would last him the whole college.
Yeah, and I'm finding Vista's more secure. There's some real advantages to Vista. So absolutely, go with Vista.
Okay,
unless you're getting a Mac. And again, if what is he interested in? What is his major going to be?
He's interested in kinesiology.
Oh, that's neat. So that's another thing to consider if you is what software he might be using. And again, the bursar at the university will be able to tell you a little bit more about that, or maybe the department head for the department he's interested in. If there's a special kinesiology program, you'll need to know that. And if it only runs on Windows, well, you have to get Windows. If it doesn't work with Vista, that could be an issue. Things like that.
Okay.
So you're going to want to find out if there's any specialized software that he's using. A lot of times specialized software, in fact, doesn't work with Vista.
Okay, are there any brands that you would want us to check into?
I'm very happy with Dell. That's mail order, though. So sometimes people say, well, I want to try it. And if you're going to go into the store and try it, I think that some good choices are Fujitsu is very good. I'm a fan of the Acer notebooks. He wants lightweight. They make Fujitsu and Acer both make some very good lightweight notebooks. They're small though, and the screens are small. And that, you know, you should ask him. Hey, do you mind if it's a small screen? Now, one thing he's going to tell you is, but I want to make sure I can play games on this laptop. And
okay.
That's not your interest,
right?
And you pay a lot more for a laptop that's a good gaming machine, and it gets a lot bigger, a lot heavier, and a lot more expensive. So. I would say to him, you know, this is not your gaming machine. Don't think of this as a gaming machine. This is a work machine.
Okay, he was interested in the Toshiba.
Toshiba's fine.
Okay.
The Portage or the satellite, the bigger Toshiba.
Satellite is
okay.
What he wanted.
Yeah, those are fine. Those are larger and a little more capable. Generally, smaller size means less power.
Okay, are they all the same when it comes as far as the battery life?
In most cases, you can get an extended battery that's bigger for better battery life. But I would say, if you're getting a, you're gonna want to get one that's a Core 2. Since you say I want this to last all 4 years, you're gonna get a Core 2 processor, the Intel Core 2 processor that's gonna give you pretty good battery life. If they offer an extended battery, a larger battery, you might want it if battery life is an issue. But it does add to the weight and size of the device. I would also say get a combo drive that is a CD burner and a DVD player. Most people don't need DVD burners.
Right.
So you can save a little money there. Get a combo drive. If you're going to get Vista, make sure it has at least 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay.
Vista likes a lot of memory.
Yeah, I remember you were talking about that.
Yeah.
And are there any things that we should look out for, what not to get?
I can't think of anything that is, you know, some of them come with thumb recognition. I think that's a waste. I think a camera may or may not be good. You say he's living at home, so I guess he isn't going to be calling you via Skype. If he were going to be on the road, a camera, built-in laptop camera might not be a bad idea. Some of them do come with those, but in this case, I think you probably don't need to spend on those. Really, what you want to spend on is RAM and a faster processor, and you will want to get Microsoft Office. And that's expensive, unfortunately, although they do have a student edition. The one thing to watch out for on that, Office 2007 student edition doesn't include Outlook, which is the email, calendaring, and address book application, which I think every student needs. And I think it's kind of cheesy of Microsoft to say the student edition doesn't include that.
Okay.
Of all things.
And is there any place on your website that we can go?
There is.
Once we're... Okay.
It's a little out of date because I update it every year and I haven't updated it for the new college season. But if you go to techguylabs.com on the left where it says tips, there is a whole article on buying a college computer that talks about some of these things, including some of the security concerns and Kensington locks and so forth. I would absolutely get him a Kensington lock so that he can lock it up. It's not going to stop somebody with wire cutters. It just slows them down. It's a deterrent. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, coming up. Paul Thurrott with a Vista tip. You stay right here. Laporte, the tech guy from Tech Guy Labs, and Paul's our Windows guy, our Vista guy. For the last few weeks, he's been giving us some really cool Vista tips. Might want to go back in time, listen to the podcast if you want to hear his tip on resizing the desktop icons or on getting some great new desktop wallpapers. This time, we're going to get a little techie on this tip. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
So there's a really nice feature in Vista. It's actually based on the Apple Exposé feature. It allows you to see all of the windows that you have open kind of in this 3D space and scroll through them and pick one.
Right.
It's kind of a neat way to see what you've got. What's it called?
Right. It's called Flip 3D.
Okay.
And it's not so much a replacement as it is an alternative to the old, you know, that Alt-Tab keyboard shortcut, which they're now calling Windows Flip. You know, the way that you flip between different windows that are open on your desktop.
Yeah, and I love that Alt-Tab. I use it all the time. So if you've got Windows, if you've got programs running or Windows open, you can just press the Alt key and the Tab key, and you keep pressing Tab until you get to the application you want, and you hit Enter.
Now, what I'd like to see is a way to replace Alt-Tab with, you know, Flip 3D, so, you know, that could trigger that. But for right now, what you do is you can hold down the Start button on your keyboard and then hit Tab like you would with Alt-Tab, except it's Start, you know, Start button Tab. And then you can scroll through the windows, you know, they're open in a 3D view. They're kind of at an angle, and they flip by very in a nice animated fashion. One of the little tricks you can do is you can actually click on any of the windows in that list with your mouse, and it will go to that window. You don't have to use just the keyboard. So you can use it in tandem with the mouse. But if you have a Microsoft mouse especially, or any kind of mouse where there's a third-party control panel where you can actually assign different functions to the different buttons, one thing you can do that's really cool is you can assign Flip 3D to a mouse button.
Oh,
so if you've got a scroll wheel,
yeah,
you can click the scroll wheel instead of it doing the default behavior, whatever that might be. You know, a lot of the Microsoft mouses have this, you know, an image view application that comes up, or a magnifier or something like that. You can have it trigger Flip 3D. So this way you can use Flip 3D completely via the mouse without having to go to the keyboard.
That would be very natural, actually. That would be great. And then if I could can I roll through the windows with the scroll wheel once I click it?
Yep, the scroll wheel goes left, you know, back and forth, and you can click on any of the windows. Even if they're not in the front, you can click on any of the windows and it will launch, you know, go to that application. Yeah. So with a Microsoft mouse, if you're using their IntelliMouse software, you go into Control Panel, find the mouse properties, and the very first tab is called Buttons. And in the latest version, they have different, you know, and this will be based on the kind of mouse you have as well, obviously. You can configure the left mount, you know, the left button, the right button, the middle button, and then if you have those extra thumb buttons, you can also configure those. So the command line is a little convoluted. I apologize for that. But what you need to change that command to is /windows/system32/run-dll32.exe. /dwmapi/105.
Now, don't go crazy writing this down. We'll put this in the show notes. You can just copy and paste it.
Right.
That's actually believe it or not, that's a very common command, that run DLL command. It allows you to run a library or routine from a DLL. And so you use it a lot to access kind of low-level features in Windows.
Exactly.
So what does this do when I've run this?
What this does is it replaces the button you're configuring. What that is, I should say, actually, that command, if you were to type that into the run box or into the, I should try that before I say it, but I believe into the start menu search box as well, that actually runs Windows Flip.
Oh.
Flip 3D, rather.
That's how you run it.
That's the hidden command that runs Flip 3D.
So this is why it wasn't obvious, because it wasn't, when you go to your control panel, it's not one of the drop-down items for the scroll wheel, but you can choose any arbitrary command. So by choosing this command, you're assigning that to the scroll wheel.
And for some reason, you know, there's a shortcut to Flip 3D in your quick launch toolbar next to the start button.
Right.
If you actually get the properties for that, you don't see this command line. It's not in the properties dialog for some reason. So it's not very easy to find. So this
How did you find this hidden feature?
This was a reader submission. It was someone who prefers to be known simply as David. He didn't give me a last name. Told me that this was the hidden command line for Flip 3D.
You know, an operating system's been out for a while now when you start hearing about hidden secret tricks. You know,
right?
People are discovering these. Hey, that's a great one. I'm gonna do that right away. That's how to do it with an IntelliMouse, but if you have a Logitech mouse, or a lot of other mice have these kind of specialized drivers where you can assign
Yeah, any mouse that gives you a special control panel for configuring the different buttons should be able to let you do this.
And we'll put the command in the show notes so you can just copy it from there and paste it into your run box. Hey, thank you, Paul Thurrott. We'll look for you on your website, of course, the super site for Windows, where you find all sorts of stuff like this. That's winsupersite.com. And on our Windows Weekly podcast every single Thursday at twit.tv. Take care, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
I gotta write that down, though, before I can put it in the show notes. that's a tricky one, isn't it? He's good. He's good. He knows how to find them. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Larry on line one from Palmdale. Hello, Larry. Welcome. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course, Larry. Thanks for calling.
So the first hour, you were talking about e-waste, and I'm trying to avoid some e-waste.
What's your e-waste?
I've got a Epson printer that's got clogged up tubes where the ink is like all dried up.
Right.
Right.
It's inkjet printer?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's one of the reasons I like printers where you replace everything when you replace the ink. You also replace the print head and so forth. And in fact, I thought most Epsons worked that way, but I guess yours is one that does not.
Well, I don't know that it does or does not, because I can't get anybody from Epson to either answer my email or talk to me on the phone.
So the first thing you want to do is you have – this is on Windows?
No, it's a Mac.
Mac. You have the Epson software installed as part of the print driver.
Yes.
In that software, you'll see that there's a cleaning routine.
Yes.
And you've done that?
Yes.
And it doesn't work?
No.
Of course it doesn't. If it worked, you wouldn't call me.
Yeah, if it worked, I'd be talking to you about another thing that I have for my second part question.
So you've run the nozzle clean and the print alignment and all those utilities, and you've done it a couple of times, and still, what, you're missing color? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, and I'm even missing black and white, and I'm missing the colors. The only thing that comes through is a little bit of the red, so I tried putting in new ink cartridges, because I had had four brand new ones there, so they're all individual ink cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
And
still
so
nothing.
None of that works. And then
Your head must be clogged up. Which Epson printer is it?
6400.
That's a good printer.
Yes, the Nolan one.
I'm thinking that it must be, and I'm not sure on this particular printer, when you replace the cartridges, you do not replace the heads.
I think that's true.
In which case, they sell a replacement head.
Okay.
So you can go online and look where they sell Epson supplies, or you can go to the store if you go to Staples or wherever. And what you're going to be looking for is the replacement head for that, because that's obviously clogged. You might be able to take, it's. I wouldn't recommend this. You might be tempted to unclog it by taking some alcohol to the head and trying to clean it, and that might work. The problem is these things are so tiny and fragile that it's much more likely to damage it.
Okay.
But generally on these Epsons, when we're replacing the cartridge, does not replace the head. And for a long time it did, but those cartridges were very expensive, and I think that's one way they've kept costs down, is you replace the head separately. And you should be able to replace that head yourself separately. Mr. Shuby tells me that he thinks that the RoboForm replacement for the Mac is called 1Passwd. The number 1, PASSWD. He'll put that in the show notes. So there's a link to a RoboForm. I think that's right. I think you're right, Shuby. A RoboForm replacement for the Mac. Those are very handy. I never got around to using them. In the past, I've used password. We were talking at the beginning of the hour about how do you solve this problem, multiple passwords, multiple websites. In the past, I've used a program that you store your passwords in and you encrypt them and stuff. And after you forget sometimes, and or they get outdated. It's kind of a hassle. I'll be honest. I use Super GenPass now almost all the time. And that's nice, because you press a bookmark in the toolbar, in the link bar of your browser, and it just fills in the password. And you don't have to remember it and so forth. I don't use it for banking and for sites where I really want to be secure. That's another case. But for just, the New York Times website, or, Amazon, or I use it for Amazon, or, Audible, those sites like that. Aaron, Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Aaron. Thanks for calling.
What line?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's line two. I got to tell you what line it is, too. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Leo. I have a problem with a hard drive I have on a Dell notebook computer.
Yes, huh?
I bought an external enclosure to take it out to try to use it as a external hard drive on another computer so I could back up my data.
Yeah.
And when I tried to read it on this other computer, it said there's an error box that kept popping up and saying that it's password protected. Is there a way of getting around that to read the files?
Do you remember password protecting it?
Yeah, I did, but the error message doesn't give you a chance. You know, the password I have is just when you turn on the machine, the initial just, you know.
The BIOS password.
Yeah, but there's no other.
You didn't turn on encryption on that hard drive, Windows encryption?
No.
Okay, so I think what the issue is that in order to look at the data on that hard drive, you have to take ownership of it. Even if you're admin on, you're using XP?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you're admin on the computer, it won't let you access those files until you take ownership of them. And it's a kind of an arcane process. I'll put a link to the Microsoft Tech Note in the show notes. The first thing to do is you have to turn off simple file sharing. And which most was on by default, you won't even see the permissions tab on it. So once you turn it off,
and this could be done on the second on the other computer, right? On the other computer,
on the computer where the hard drive lives now.
Okay, well I can't access the Windows operating system on that hard drive. It's trying to reinstall it. That's why I tried to take it out to use it as an external hard drive on another computer.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, on the computer that you're going to use the as an external hard drive, on the computer that's working. In order to get those files, you have to take permission. You have to take ownership of them. You see what I'm saying? So that's the so one when you've got it hooked up via the USB cable. By the way, I'm going to show you. I talk about it a little bit later. Great solution for that. Take ownership when it's hooked up to that computer that's working, and then you'll be able to access the files. We'll put a link in the show notes. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 888-827-5536 is the number. 888-ASK-LEO. And the chat room is great. irc.dslextreme.com. I get a lot of great information there. I talked to a number of people in the chat room who have Epson printers. They say, no, you cannot replace the print head on Epson printers. You cannot replace the print head. So there is a solution you can buy. In fact, I think Epson sells a alcohol-based solution that you could soak it in and try to dissolve that print. But I was looking on Amazon at some of the reviews of the Epson, Stylus CX6400, which our caller had, and several people said this is okay until the print, the ink dries out and the print head stops working, and then you're stuck. Number of people complained. Really, I think a good idea, before I buy anything, I actually read the reviews, believe it or not, on Amazon. Now, you have to remember sometimes some of those reviews are by the manufacturer. So I usually take the most glowing review out. I also take the worst review out because everybody's going to have a problem with any device. But if you see, as I did on this page, three or four people saying the print head dries out, you can't print, that's a good sign that may not be a good choice. Had I read that before buying the printer, I probably would say, don't buy the printer. Don't buy the printer. Let's see. Dustin mentioned that the caller with the ground hum coming out of his receiver going into his computer said sometimes the cable box causes that ground hum. If you're plugging a cable box into you have an AV receiver and you're plugging a cable box into it, that can cause problems. So that's good to know about. Eagle Rock, California, line 3, Jennifer, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy.
Hello.
Hey.
My first question I'll ask, it's funny, it's in regards to the Epson Stylus Photo 820.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
It's it kind of leads to the other thing. My friend gave me one. She
That's
upgraded
nice.
And gave
yeah.
it to me. And I thought, so I went out, but she said it needed a new toner. So I went out and I bought the toner. It was about $70.
Yeah.
I used it. It worked, right?
Yeah.
So I left it for a few months and didn't try it. And then I went to use it again, and it totally didn't
Same
work
thing.
At all.
Same thing.
And I think that the toner dried up in that time. And she told me, oh, of course, you have to use it at least once every week. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, you know? So anyway, I've decided I've had it with these inkjets, and I want to look into getting an entry-level color laser just
yes.
to, as a, you know, to see how much that might be. And I wondered what you would suggest. I have a Mac.
Ah, that's important to say, because there are some printers that don't work so well with a Mac. I'm currently mm-hmm. using an Epson laser printer that works quite well with a Mac. It's kind of expensive. I'm not. It's more of a all-in-one office product, so I'm not going to necessarily recommend it. But it works great with a Mac, and it does a good job. The top seller in the inexpensive laser market is
color laser.
Ah, color laser. All right. Let me see if I'll tell you what I do when I'm looking for the information on these is I go to PCMag.com. They have mm-hmm. the problem with printer reviews. I can look at a few, but I can't look at them all. I'd have to have a fairly large lab to have every printer in there. They do it, and they do it. And I trust their editor's choice reviews. So
okay.
So that would be a good place to look. I think Lexmark, Epson, the names that you probably know are very good. You can search lasers by price under $500. The one they like is the Xerox Phaser. But that's right at $500.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of pricey. Let's see what else they like. Yeah, they like the Lexmark pretty well. That's $250. And I think Lexmark makes a fairly good, inexpensive laser printer. Dell sells one too, believe it or not. Now, you said color, and I think you're going to find that in that area, you don't have a whole lot of choices. The cheapest color printers are mostly a little more expensive. I guess they like the Konica Minolta Magic Color is probably the least expensive, decent one. So there's some to look at. But again, I would read the reviews. I think that these are very, very useful and in a lot more detail than I could ever do. I've played with them. As I said, I've been very happy. I have an Epson AccuLaser. I have the big all-in-one CX-11, but it's a good laser, fax, scanner, copier, all those. Line 5, Joe in Corona, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, hi, this is Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
How you doing?
I'm good. How you?
Doing good. Hey, got a question. I've got a Dell X5 PDA
okay.
that I've had for years.
The Axum.
Yep. And it's got the big screen on it.
Yeah, those are nice.
What I'd like to get is a pocket PC phone that would do the same with the same size screen. The only one I've been able to find is the Samsung i730, which they don't make anymore, and it's got a little bitty screen.
You know, they all do. In fact, HP's iPacs, or I guess they're compact iPacs, they just announced a couple of new phones, and they have the small screen again.
Yeah, as I'm getting older, the small screen is not
I know what you mean.
The thing for me.
I don't know what the solution is. I mean, I think that I think what's happening is either they're using smartphone, which doesn't have a touch screen, so they make it a smaller screen anyway,
right.
Or they're putting a keyboard on there, and that's eating up some space and so forth.
Uh-huh. Well, I like the iPhone, but it's not.
It's not out yet.
Yeah, that too.
And you don't know if you like it really, because we don't. We haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, that's true.
So it everything looks good until you actually get one.
Yeah, well, the i730 looked good until I actually found somebody
yeah.
who had one and noticed how small everything is on the screen.
They're all like that now. I don't know. I don't know really what the solution is. Have you looked at the Trio 700W?
Not really.
Yeah, it's a smaller screen, and it's not a touch screen. I bet you want the touch screen, don't you?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'd rather have a touch screen than a keypad.
I would say that the best thing to look at anyway. I don't know if it's nothing's that Axum was nice. It was very affordable. They did a nice job with it. I would look at the HP iPacs.
Yeah, but are they phone capable?
They have some new phone ones, and they're
okay.
I don't know if they're as big, but they're going to be as big as you can get. Singular offers one, the 6920, and then there's the 6940, I think. I'm not sure who offers that, but that's a good question. I'll put out to the audience too. What's a big touch screen Windows Mobile? You'd like Windows Mobile 6 phone? Got a suggestion? 8888. Ask Leo. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And a good day to you. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. We talk about technology every weekend on this station at this time, and I love doing it. I'd love to do it with you. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number, 888-827-5536 from the beautiful Tech Guy Labs in Northern California, the northernmost part of Silicon Valley. This is a user group for the whole world. And I say that, and I really want to emphasize, it's all of us together answering these questions, because I get a lot of help, and I'm glad of it, especially from the chat room. Some great solutions for our last caller who wanted a pocket PC phone with a big screen. And I don't know why I forgot, but of course, HTC, which I think makes the best pocket PC phones anyway, makes a large screen phone. Sprint has it as a 6700. T-Mobile has it as the MDA. Singular now has a model, the 8525. Big screen, probably almost as big as your Axum. And I like it because the keyboard, it still has a keyboard, but it slides out underneath. And it's a pretty full-size keyboard. So I don't know why I didn't think of that, but I should have thought of that. But that's a good one to look at, depending on what your carrier is. These all have Wi-Fi, too. So they're full-fledged pocket PCs. The only thing they don't do, they don't have that touch screen. And They're eliminating the touch screen. I don't know. These are all Windows Mobile 5 devices. Of course, Windows Mobile 6 is out, but the phones are going to take a little longer before you won't be able to get a device for a while. But thanks to all the folks in the chat room who made some great recommendations for larger size pocket PC phones. And then I was talking about laser printers, color laser printers, and one of our listeners, who is in the chat room also, said, "Hey, whoa, I bought the Lexmark and I went through four, never got one to work, and I can't recommend them." Yikes. So that's just, you know, Voyager, thank you for the suggestion. He said he couldn't use it with an extension cord. The printer died after 1 month, and he just gave up after four replacements, none of which worked. And I have to say, I have heard some negatives about Lexmark. I think Canon and Epson are really the guys to go with. Although, again, I would trust PC Magazine's reviews. I think they're very good. PCMag.com. So, let me see here. Who are our callers? I think I talked to Jennifer in Eagle Rock. Did I not? I can't.
You did.
I did. Let's go to line four. Patrick in Montrose, Michigan. Hello, Patrick. Leo Laporte,
hey, Leo.
The tech guy. Hello.
Well, first off, of course, greetings from the chat.
Who are you? What's your chat handle?
This is MacMan.
Hey, MacMan. Are you a MacMan?
No, I just happen to be a BattleTech fan.
And, oh, mech. You know, yeah, you're into mechs. Yeah. Are there mech games still around, or are they kind of old hat now?
They're still around, mostly the tabletop stuff, but there's a few of the games out.
They were very popular video games. You get in this big battle suit, and you're like a giant robot, and you walk around and knock things around.
The last one came out about a year ago, and they're working on Mech Warrior 5 now. It'll be a while.
That's it, Mech Warrior. Yep. I have to say, and I'll talk about this a little later on the show, but I'm kind of looking at a PS3 now, eyeing them longingly. I've been playing with one, and I'm pretty impressed, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, too. Final Fantasy 13 looks
pretty neat. Anyway, what can I do for you, MacMan?
Well, I've got a Nintendo DS, and according to the Nintendo Wi-Fi website, it won't work with my wireless router.
You have to buy their little Nintendo DS dongle.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Thank you
at.
Very much.
And well, you know, if I had bought the previous model of this brand of router, it would have worked just fine. And I'm wondering, will their little dongle interfere with my wireless internet? Because I don't know if it's an RF radio frequency or if it's
no. It actually turns. It's a little Wi-Fi access point on a USB dongle, and so it uses the same frequency. It's Wi-Fi.
Oh,
so,
dear.
Well, no, that shouldn't interfere. It's just it would be like having another Wi-Fi access point in there. And if worst case, you'd change the channel on your base station, and then everything would be fine.
Okay, because I'm also looking at using it with my laptop when I go to school because I can't use the school's wireless internet with it either because it requires a login, and you can't log in.
Right,
to the
it's very simple. in its capabilities. Yeah, no, you shouldn't. It should be transparent. It should operate just fine.
Okay, because they said it had only a 60-foot range, so I figured it was like an radio frequency type.
No, as far as I know, it's a standard. I have one. It's a standard Wi-Fi unit. It's not. It maybe just isn't that powerful because it's running off the USB. So it can't. Obviously, it's not going to have as much power as when you plug into the wall. So no, I think you'll be fine, McMahon. No problem. Enjoy it. So he's going to use that. I'll tell you, you know, you talk about big screens and all of that. He has two of them, but they're not the biggest screens in the world, and yet people use them to browse. They do a lot of things with them. It's kind of an amazing. It's actually a pretty cool game machine, I have to say. I like it. They're telling me in the chat room, don't buy a PS3. It'll bring you nothing but misery, says SU182. David in Los Angeles. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, David.
What line?
Oh, I'm sorry, line two.
Hello.
Hello, David.
Hey, Leo. Got a question. Help.
Help is a statement.
Pardon?
Help is a statement. Help. Help. Help.
Help.
Help.
It's not a big problem, but it's just been driving me crazy.
Yeah.
The dialogue box. I've got Windows XP on the HP Pavilion laptop.
Yes, sir.
And the dialogue box, when I try to open files or save files on the desktop, when I'm in the desktop dialogue box,
yeah,
it takes forever to open and close, and sometimes it freezes.
Oh, interesting.
Everything else seems to work fine. And
did you ever install any... I mean, it sounds like you've got some plugin installed that it's looking at. You didn't install anything to enhance the dialogue box, did you?
No.
No, certainly not.
I wouldn't know what that was.
So is it? It's only when you're opening, or is it when you're saving as well?
Both, and just the dialogue box for the desktop. But the desktop works fine, you know, by itself when it's just the desktop open, and the file save and open in the dialogue box in all the other.
Oh, so it's only when you say desktop, you mean the Explorer?
No, it's like say like I'm saving a Word document.
Yeah. Oh, I see. When you go to the desktop,
when it's that particular dialog box for the desktop, like when you go, like if I was going save as,
and then you click the desktop icon, yeah, and then
when I go to like, yeah,
and so as long as you're in another folder, a lower down folder, you don't have that problem.
No problem.
Huh. Well, one thing that it does in there, it is loading in icons. And I'm thinking, I mean, this is off the top of my head. I haven't seen that particular problem, but it has to parse those icons. It may be that, I mean, think about it. Your desktop had many, many different files on there. The icon cache is probably fairly large on the desktop. And that may be taking a while for the save dialog to parse so that it could put up icons. Even though you may not have many files there anymore. So I think what you probably want to do is clear the icon cache. Now, there are a couple of ways to do that. If you have Tweak UI, which everybody should have anyway, it's a wonderful, very useful tool that Microsoft offers for free. Just do a Google on TWEAKUI, and it has an icon cache clearer. You can, of course, just delete the folder called Shell Icon Cache, but that can be a little bit tricky. It's in the System Root folder, so you.
Oh, I know enough to muck everything. I'm a whole computer. I'm a fiddler. I'm bad.
You're a fiddler? All right. Well, yeah. It's a hidden file, so you'll have to change your Explorer so that you can see hidden files. and you'll have to delve into the system root folder. The easiest way to do that is click start run and then enter percent system root percent. That'll take you to that folder. And if you've got hidden files exposed, you'll see a file called shell icon cache.
Right.
One word. Delete it. And if you log off and log back in, you'll have to rebuild. It'll rebuild that cache. First time you access a folder, it'll be a little bit slower, but from then on, it should be faster. And I suspect that's what's happened, is that the shell icon cache for your desktop is huge. Makes sense. You stick a lot of files there on your desktop. It has to remember the icons. After a while, you know, it's got to parse all that, even though those files are long gone. It doesn't delete icons from that cache ever. So try that. That would be my guess. And you should get Tweak UI anyway. It's a very useful tool. Just Google Tweak UI. The first thing that comes up is Microsoft's page. It's free, and it has also a delete cache button. But if you like to hack around, it's a hidden file in the system root folder, the Windows folder, and it's called shell icon cache. You just delete that, and all will be well. I love little tweaks like that, and Windows is full of them. What's fun now is we're learning all new tweaks in Vista, and everything's different. I don't even know if Vista has a shell icon cache. I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm going to learn how to do all these things all over again. But that's kind of the fun part of a new operating system. It's interesting because Mac for a long time was the anti-tweakers operating system. You couldn't do much. And now OS X has become as tweakable, in some ways more tweakable than Windows. And Windows is moving in the other direction. It's not as easy to mess with these things as it used to be, especially in Vista. Makes sense. That's how you get in trouble. Let me know if that doesn't work or if that does work for you, David. I appreciate the call. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Chat room's open at irc.dslextreme.com. And, of course, the webpage is techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Gizwiz is coming up in just a bit with his gadget of the day. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's 827-5536. We do podcasts of the show after the show is over. I'm a little slow for last week's podcast because I was out of town, but I will get those up soon. That's all available at the show notes page, techguylabs.com. And many of the people who appear on the show also part of my Twit network, like Steve Gibson and Paul Theroux and Dick DiBartolo, and you can hear them at twit.tv. Might be in the chat room is saying I should get the Vista Transformation Pack, which I guess is a download. Not sure if that's from Microsoft or who that's from. But it's freeware. Okay, Mike, I get it. Does it turn Windows XP into Windows Vista? I get it. I don't know. That might be a safer way. Certainly a cheaper way to get Vista. It's not exactly Vista, but that's an interesting idea. You know, they have these Vista extras now that you can get. Finally, they came out with some extras. One of them is it's kind of disappointing, frankly. One of them is poker, Hold'em, Texas Hold'em poker. And the other one is this kind of interesting motion desktop that they've been talking about for well over a year on Vista. And what it essentially does is lets you put a movie as your desktop. And there's some pretty cool ones. Stardock, makers of the Object Desktop, who apparently worked on this with them, make one that has, you know, it's got a field of the traditional Windows grass hill. But the grass subtly waves, which sounds pretty cool. I like that idea. I can only imagine how it slows down your computer. But I guess if you have enough of a processor to run Vista anyway, you probably have enough to waste on waving grass on your desktop. Not sure I would recommend it. But hey, if you can, do it, right? Let's go to Winter Springs. Craig is on line one. Hello, Craig. Welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Yeah, hey, Leo. Honored to speak with you. Leo, I have two questions. Actually, the first question I have, which I told your segue there, is that I have a Gateway 818 GM series computer, Media Center Edition, a couple years old, and I have Adobe Flash Player on it. However, for some reason, the past couple, several months, probably close to a year, seems almost, whenever I'm in Internet Explorer or Avant browser or anything that, that has like a Internet Explorer engine, it doesn't play Flash. It tells me I need to install it,
oh,
and I know
so
I have it installed, but yet when I go to Netscape browser and I go to View as Firefox, I can, the Flash works fine. Like,
well, remember, Flash has to be installed for each browser. But I presume, well, now, when you go to flash.com, does it say you have Flash?
Well, I haven't, I've never gone to flash.com. I've just gone to Adobe,
Well, it's the same place. Yeah, Macromedia. It's the same place. It's where you download Flash.
Right,
So it says you have Flash or no?
Yeah, it says I have it. Like, in other words, when I click the install and you see the little rotating box.
And all, it's doing that. How interesting.
Yeah.
Now, lately, because they've upgraded to a newer Flash player, I noticed that I had to upgrade my Flash player quite a bit. You know, that was an issue, but I guess, I presume that you've upgraded to the latest version and all that.
Yeah, I've upgraded to the latest version, and it works, like I said, when I'm in Netscape and I go to the
Well, again, remember,
Firefox.
You have to install it for each browser, so it, the fact that it's working in Netscape or working in Firefox wouldn't necessarily mean that it's working. What you want to do is go to the macromedia.com/software/flash, you know, the Flash Player site, and you want to see, you should say Adobe Flash Player is installed version, and it should be version 9 something. So you want to make sure you've got the version 9 installed, and it will tell you which browsers and so forth. It could be an ActiveX issue. You know, the way it's installed on Internet Explorer is different than how it's installed on Netscape and Firefox. It's actually an ActiveX control on those. So, you don't, are you using security software to block ActiveX controls, or do you have scripting turned off? Or
not to the best of my knowledge. I've gone into the advanced tab of the, you know, and look, and made sure the scripting was on and whatnot. And it, everything seems to be in order, but yeah, it, for some reason, I just can't get to Internet Explorer.
Yeah. I would say go to the Flash Player Support Center. They have it on the site. And what you probably want to do is they have instructions there on uninstalling Flash.
Okay.
There's a little program you can download that says uninstall Flash Player.
All right.
And what I would do is run that. It's probable that you've just got it somehow damaged or corrupted or that the browser itself is confused. So if you uninstall it and then you go back to the Flash site, it'll say, oh, you don't have Flash. You want to install Flash. You'll be able to install Flash. I'm thinking that's going to fix it.
Oh, okay, and you have to have all the browsers shut down when you
exactly.
reinstall it, right?
Exactly. So the uninstall won't even work if the browsers are running. So make sure. But it's on the Adobe site. It used to be flash.com, and now that's not as easy to use as it used to be. They really need a direct site to install the Flash Player. But if you go to the help, the support section for the Flash Player, it has an uninstaller. That's what I would try to use. Coming up in just a bit, our gadget of the day, the daily Gizwiz, I guess the weekly Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California. I am Leo Laporte. I am the Tech Guy. And as every week, our friendly Gizwiz joins us, the gadget guru extraordinaire, Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer and host of the Daily Gizwiz on the Twit podcast. Podcast Network. He also, we call this now the Weekly GizWiz.
Do, because I am the GizWiz, and I have something fun and inexpensive.
I like that, because usually gadgets are really expensive.
Yeah, well, your $1,000 ear pieces where you go to the hospital and they surgically implant them for life.
Yeah, but you never lose them that way.
No, you never do. You never do. But $10,000 an ear.
Yeah, it's a little pricey.
I can't even afford mono. anyway, the website is funfriends.com. And Leo, they make neat little cuddly characters that cover cell phones. And they've been around for several years, and they keep adding to the line. So the latest thing they're doing is they're making little cute covers for iPods. They are now licensing ball teams so they can make little cuddly college mascots. And they make computer mice for kids that look like little bears. And
you know what they don't make?
What's that?
They don't make a very good jingle. You want it?
Oh.
Funfriends.com. Your personality to your cell phone. High tech products never have to be cold.
Okay, that's enough.
Okay. but they do have three choices on there. They need the GizWiz singers to.
We could improve this a little bit
to punch up their website.
But you know what? We're not buying the jingle. We're buying the fuzzy cover. So it's like a stuffed animal for your cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. And they're very cute. And you know, years ago when they were very first introduced at CES, the guy said, you know, I'll put one on your phone. And I said, nah. And he said, oh, they're cute. And I said, I don't do cute. And he said, oh, do it. So he put one on. And then it became hard to carry. So I clipped it onto my CES badge. And person after person, oh, what booth do they have those at?
That's pretty cute.
Yeah, I knew the guys.
They have a Leo one. That's a little lion.
Oh, a little Leo the lion?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
Now, does your cell phone still work okay? I mean, is it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it makes it so that phones with antennas, there's always a little space for the antenna to still open. All right. Okay. I have the little Motorola flip phone that I have my little bear on. They're really cute. And as I said, they're like $10. When is your birthday?
November.
Oh, good. So it's far enough away that you'll forget that I said this. But that's what I'm getting you.
Thanks. You're so generous. You know, in my family, it's a tradition to give a St. Patrick's Day gift.
Yeah, but St. Patrick's Day is over.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
So next year, could I expect something?
Yeah. If I happen to forget your birthday this November.
But this is St. Patrick's weekend. Doesn't that count?
No. It's not. No, it's like.
Did you do anything for St. Patrick's Day yesterday? Did you drink green beer or anything like that?
Nah.
Not Irish. You're Italian.
I'm not Irish.
You celebrate Columbus Day?
Columbus Day, I drink beer. I drink green beer. It's an old tradition that never caught on.
No.
I think we were the only Italian family that did.
What's the matter? Right. You're drinking beer.
I know. And I finally said to my mom, I said, Mom, why are we drinking green beer? And she said, it's okay, so it's spoiled. What am I supposed to do? Throw it out?
Yeah, have some green meat to go with your green beer. Thank goodness that never caught on.
Yeah. No,
so
it's always,
funfriends.com.
Funfriends.com, and they're very cute. And like I said,
they got iPod cases now.
iPod cases, and they have those, as you mentioned, they're doing college mascot covers.
That's kind of cool. They have, if you go to the licensed product section, they have Alabama, they have Auburn, they have the Florida Gator. That's cute. Georgia.
Yeah.
Is that the dogs? The dogs?
Yeah, it is.
LSU Tiger.
I'm trying to find what Leo the Lion looks like here. So
that's under a bar style covers. He's cute.
But okay.
You have to have a bar phone for that. I don't have a bar.
Oh, okay. You know, like I ain't buying you the phone, pal. I'm buying you the cover.
The phone they're showing, that could cost like $12, I think. You could really break the bank on that one. All right, Dick. Hey, we join Dick, of course, every weekday on twit.tv for his daily GizWiz podcast, but also go to his website, gizwiz.biz, and he talks about gadgets, lots of them, a ton of gadgets.
Lots of gadgets, stuff that we don't always cover here, and play the What the Heck Is It game. Guess what it is? Win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine.
Some obscure gadget that nobody ever could figure out. This time it looks like, I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you're absolutely wrong.
No, come on, so tell me the truth. It's there a Bozo Pez dispenser face down.
I cannot acknowledge that in any way.
You know, I hope I'm not right, because that would really spoil the contest, but somehow I don't think I am.
If you were right, I would have said nothing.
You would have said exactly what you said this time.
Right.
Well, it is fun, and even you can win even if you get the answer wrong just by being clever.
Yeah, absolutely. We give away magazines for right answers. We give away magazines for wrong answers.
Gizwiz.biz. Hey, Dick, it's great to talk to you. I'll talk again next week.
I'll be here.
And if you like Dick and enjoy him, of course, I grew up reading him in Mad Magazine. But if you enjoy his segments on the show, he does a daily Gizwiz at twit.tv. Let's get another caller on the show, shall we? 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. I do want to talk about, I'm running out of time. Man, there's never enough time in the show. I do want to talk about the PS3, because I'm really torn on this. Paul Thurrott, who does our Windows Vista, he's my Vista expert, and a gaming guy. And he and I talk Xbox 360 all the time when we talk on the phone and stuff, because I love Xbox 360 and it looks great on an HD TV. He went out and bought a PS3 the other day, and he says he loves it. He's been playing Resistance Fall of Man, which is a pretty violent shooter, but apparently the graphics are stunning. I just saw played with for quite a while a beautiful off-road biking and driving game. Was it Motocross? Something like that. Just stunning. And I have to say, and these are the first generation games for the PS3. They it always takes a while, like a year before the games really catch up with the hardware, what the hardware is capable of. And the early games already look so good. I think better than the Xbox 360. Slightly, not a huge amount, but better on a good TV if you have an HD TV. So I'm just waffling. It's $700. That's what's really stopping me. It's awfully expensive. But you get a Blu-ray, HD, DVD player, and they're certainly plentiful. There's no lack of them. Somebody said, why don't you wait till the price drops? But I don't think the price will drop. I don't think Sony can make... they're already losing a couple hundred bucks on every unit anyway. So now I'm torn about the PS3. It does look good. But there's what? There's five games, six games. I don't know. It's going to be a while. I tell my wife, well, honey, I have to buy it for the show. This is part of my research, you see. I have to study this stuff. Let's go to line one. Craig in Winter. Did I talk to Craig yet? Craig in Winter Springs.
Line three or line four?
Let's go to line three instead. Scott in Sherman Oaks. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Leo. I love your show.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
No, Terry, we only have Macs and Linux. I don't allow Windows through the door.
Friends don't let friends buy Windows. Is that what you're saying?
By the way, when you were saying PS3, I thought you were saying CS3.
CS3,
I'm
no.
Waiting for that to upgrade.
I am using CS3 in beta Photoshop.
No,
boy,
no,
that is
I'm
nice.
I'm not. I want to see the full version before I even look at it.
Oh, it's funny. The beta is very reliable and very good. And the nice thing is it's Intel. So if you have an Intel Mac, you're going to want to.
Well, it's my girlfriend. She has a web design business.
Yeah,
I'm not part of it. And no, I
want
to talk to you about optical scanning.
OCR.
Scanners. But also, you were talking about TCP/IP protocols.
Yes.
I actually went to Van Nuys High School with Vince Cerf, Steve Crocker, and John Pope.
Wow. The fathers of the Internet. Wow.
Yep. Vince went to Stanford. Steve went with me to UCLA. I mean, I was a biology major. And John Postal actually couldn't decide what he wanted to do. You know, he was. And he went to Valley College and then transferred into UCLA.
Oh, isn't that funny? And, of course, he ended up running the Internet assigned names and numbers
exactly.
for a long time. He was a guy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's unreal that those people were there. You know, I took math and German with these guys, and I thought it was a math cretin.
Well, the thing that's kind of interesting is really it was just the time had come. And they were there in the right place at the right time. I don't think, they're great guys and they're bright, but I don't think that they did anything particularly out of the ordinary. They just were there at the right time and the right place.
Oh, I don't know anything about it. What's amazing to me, and I only found it out literally 10 years ago, that we had all gone to school together. Yeah.
Vid Cerf now works at Google. He worked at MCI for a long time.
Steve Crocker's still there. John Postol, unfortunately, he died of a heart attack in 1999. Yeah.
Vid's a great guy. I have met Vid. Of the three, he's the one I've interviewed. And just a wonderful, sweet, brilliant guy. Really neat
but
guy.
But then you know why, because I have a PhD in history, why I felt like a math
person. Oh, yeah. Oh, I would never have tried to match wits with him. Believe
but
me.
I was in the same class, and I thought, God, you're dumb.
That I understand.
I've got some old manuscripts.
Okay.
And I want to scan them in. My girlfriend has, she runs PearlEye.com, and she, it's a web development company. She's got state-of-the-art stuff, but I don't know how to do optical scanning.
Pretty much any scanner will do this and do a fine job.
What would you recommend right now?
I use an Epson Perfection, and I think they're very good. The line ranges from $70 to $300. I don't think you need to buy Well, but also, you don't need a super high-end. You're not going to scan them at too high a resolution, and the file sizes will be too big anyway.
Okay.
Now, you say optical, which means, sounds to me like you want to, besides merely getting an image of these, you want to turn them into text.
Oh, exactly. I want to be able to edit.
So for that, you need OCR software, and they don't come with OCR software.
Will that work on a Mac?
There's very little good stuff for the Mac, unfortunately. And
well, how about Linux?
Even worse.
All right. Okay. Well, no. Go to
Nuance.com. This is the company that makes all of these scan recognition programs. I'm going to have to look for one for the Mac. The other thing is, since you say they're antique books, if the typefaces are tiny or odd, these things don't do as good a job. Let me see if I can find a good optical character recognition program for you for the Mac. This is one area, both speech recognition and optical character recognition, where the Mac lags Windows. On the other hand, you could use Parallels on that high-end Mac you've obviously got. And do a fine job. That's the Windows emulator. Let me look for it and do some research for you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy, taking your calls but running out of time. So much to talk about. You know what? Just going to have to do another show. The chat room's going crazy over this PS3 versus Xbox 360. And it's really clear that there are many, 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 many more good games for the 360. I mean, nobody's saying that. I'm just thinking the PS3, you know, which I had written off for a while, mostly because it was so expensive. I want to give it a little more credit. After playing some games on it, it's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And we'll just have to defer that conversation for another day, because I do have so many callers, and I want to get to as many of them as I can. Going to line four first, Devin, West Covina, California. Hello, Devin. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. I have some questions on PC broadband cards. Do you have any idea which ones? Basically, you know,
Who's your carrier right now?
Right now, I have T-Mobile, and
okay.
I know
so they don't offer
really
a card. Yeah, there's really the two choices are Verizon and Sprint.
That's what I'm saying.
And the Verizon Evdo is very, very fast. Sprint just came out with a new card that is it's a Rev-A card that I was supposed to get a hold of and. I ran into a ladder as I was driving down there, and I bashed my car up, and I couldn't make it. So I'm waiting to get that card, but I've heard very good things about it. I think they're both equally fast, and that's why I asked which carrier you had, because that would probably be the one to go with. Coverage is a big issue, too.
Yeah, it is.
You have to make sure it's supported in the area, not only in West Covina, where you are now, but where you're going. Are you going to pretty much just use it at home?
No, actually, basically out of state.
Look at their coverage maps. I would say right now Verizon certainly has the advantage in terms of coverage. But of course, Sprint will be coming on strong. And now there's also HSDPA, which is coming along, and that's going to give you even higher speed data rates. But I would say if you're buying right now, you're going out of state, you don't have a preference because you don't have a particular carrier right now. then I'd say the Verizon Wireless. The Evdo card is very, very good. And it's going to give you the most coverage. Sprint's still rolling out coverage in a lot of areas. It's not 100% by far. But if you know where you're going to be using it, I would look on the maps on both companies and see. You have to. In other words, you can have that card. It'll work almost anywhere cell coverage will work, but you only get the high speed where they've enabled the high speed. And so that's what you want to look at. It's not their cellular coverage map, but their high-speed data coverage map. And frankly, it's not, you know, it's not everywhere that their cellular coverage is. My bet right now, Devin, for you would be Verizon. But that's all, you know, ask me in 6 months. It's probably going to be a different answer. It's all changing very rapidly right now as cell carriers bring out high-speed networks. T-Mobile's the laggard in this, really. Verizon, Sprint, even Singular is rolling out high speed. They're doing HSDPA, and T-Mobile is just basically Edge or GPRS, and that's what happens is that, by the way, on all these cards they'll always work, but they'll downgrade to GPRS, which is much, much slower if they don't have the high speed connection. Line two, Daryl, Mission Viejo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Mr. Leo, hi.
Hey.
Hey, I got an HP Pavilion I just bought. It's got Vista on it, Vista mm-hmm. Business.
Yep.
I don't like it. I want to use my old tried and true XP Professional.
I don't blame you.
Which is an upgrade from Windows 2000.
Okay.
I can't install it. It keeps telling me there's a newer version of Windows on there.
So you have to format the drive. You have to get rid of Vista entirely. Format the drive.
I tried to partition it and stick it in the partition, and now I'm just going to erase the whole thing.
Erase the whole thing. You can always go back to Vista if you got a disk. Did they give you a disk when you bought the Pavilion?
Yeah, it has whatever.
The recovery, the system recovery disk. That's Vista with all the other stuff HP gives you. I almost said another word for stuff.
Yeah, I already take half the stuff out of it.
I hate the stuff they put on there. Yeah, and HP is really one of the worst. You're just going to what happens is Windows to protect you won't install itself on a newer version. So if it sees Vista, it's just going to stop. So format the drive, put XP on. Now you can and then put Vista on and partition.
Afterwards.
It'll see XP and say, okay. Now, I'm not sure how the recovery disks will work. They'll probably blast everything out. But you might. It depends on what kind of disk you got. If it's got a Windows installer, a Vista installer on there, it'll say, oh, I see you have XP. Would you like to upgrade it, or would you like to have a dual boot system? And then you can choose.
I tried for the dual boot, but I'll just...
You can't do it with Vista. You can't do it backwards.
Oh, okay.
You can't install Vista and then dual boot XP. You can, but it's very tricky. But you can put XP on, and then Vista will do that for you. And it's going to ask when you install the XP, it's going to say, I'm an upgrade. Do you have the Windows 2000 disk or whatever? And you just put the Windows 2000 disk in and it'll do
exactly.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the way to do it, and you'll have no problems. And you know, I don't blame you. A lot of people are doing that, frankly.
Well, yeah, my hardware's just got old drivers.
It won't work.
It won't work.
Yep. And that's why I say to people, don't rush out and upgrade to XP or to a Vista. If you've got an XP machine, you probably should stick with it for a little while. If you're buying a new machine, that's a different matter. Of course, you're buying a new machine, but you have lots of old hardware.
Old hardware and software.
Yeah, well, as speaking as somebody who is old hardware, I'm sympathetic.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Thanks. Take care, Daryl. All right. Yeah, old hardware, you know, it's hard to teach old hardware new tricks. I was looking for a optical character recognition program for the Mac, and Nuance does make OmniPage for the Mac still. I wasn't sure. OmniPage is the program. But a couple of things about optical character recognition. That's where you take a scan. You know, when you scan an image or a page or a picture or whatever, you're just making a picture of it. You can't edit it. You can't see the contents. It's just a picture, like you took it with a camera. To turn it into editable text, you have to use OCR, optical character recognition software. It's funny. Computers are great at so many things. One thing they're bad at is recognizing speech, handwriting, and text. The things we do so well as humans... A kindergartner does a better job of recognizing text than OmniPage or any program does. It'll work better if the text is large, the typeface is regular, but it's always a little bit of a pain. It's never 100% accurate. But OmniPage is the one to get for the Macintosh. That's the best on the market. And frankly, it's probably as good as the Windows version. It's pretty much the same program as they offer in Windows. And that's from Nuance, Nuance. Just... You know, the scanner is not important. If you have a relatively good quality scan, doesn't need super high resolution. It's the software that makes a difference. I'm out of time, but I'll be back next time. I hope you will too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great computing week. Bye-bye.
And you're clear.
Thank you, Saw.
Thank you. Good show.
Well done. Bravo. I'm going to try to figure out what the heck is going on.
Okay.
Fiend, you probably are too. If you've ever,
well, hopefully it's something simple. I hope on your end.
I hope it's something stupid I'm doing. Although your hard drive will fail. It's just a matter of time. And if you're backing up on an external hard drive or a CD, the only thing that happened is that Windows, there was a Windows update, and that could be that it broke. You lose everything. I'm going to try. That's why ultimately there's only
call Microsoft and yell at them.
Yeah, efficient, secure way to do it. It's called Carbonite.
Okay, well, Jeff will be in here tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Carbonite. And I've given Jeff all my contacts.
Is he going to be the board op from now on, or is he background?
He's going to be doing Sundays for the next 2 weeks, and then starting the 1st of April, he's going to do both Saturday and Sunday.
$50 a year, but as a board op. Do it for free. For the that's his real skill set. Use my name, Leo.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. 2 months free. If you
everybody here was like, oh, we're going to get Cabot. Cool.
Carbonite.com. I'm good. Well, I thank you, and I will see you tomorrow. Carbonite.
Yes, sir.
Thanks very much for coming in, Steve.
All right. No problem.
Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.